Between the here, between the now, between the north, between the south, between the west, between the
Welcome to Animation Station. This is our podcast about animated movies, mostly.
Obscure animated movies, I guess.
Yeah, semi-obscure.
Some that have deeper symbolic meanings than others. I don't know. Yeah, we don't really have a dedicated theme for everything yet. It's more just of, like, they're either movies that we've been meaning to see or that we know are underrated gems or just movies that we really like that might be called classics.
Right. So this first episode is about Song of the Sea and some of its...
Hopefully it doesn't feel too much like a first episode.
Yeah, we'll
we're taking that risk anyway, but...
We talk about some of the themes and folklore present in the movie, mm-hmm. and...
We go into a couple of comparisons, too, but you'll just have to find out, I guess. Forewarning, this does feature spoilers, so we highly recommend seeing the movie first. If you don't care about spoilers, go for it anyway, but the story, it'll make a lot more sense listening to the podcast after you see the movie.
Yeah.
So, but just as a forewarning, spoilers, so don't let that ruin it for you. But,
strap in and enjoy.
Hope you enjoy it. Thanks, guys.
Hello, I'm Robbie.
And I'm Tracy.
And, we're going to talk about Song of the Sea today. So, Song of the Sea was a recently released animated movie made by Cartoon Saloon.
Mm-hmm. They're an animation studio based out of Ireland.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they previously did The Secret of the Kells.
Mm-hmm.
Song of the Sea is their second sort of big release.
Mm-hmm.
And it centers on a family and ultimately sort of how you deal with loss,
mm-hmm.
and sort of complex emotions like that. It starts out with... the family, Ben and...
Ben, Brona, and their father, Connor. Ben is their son. Brona is the mother, is Ben's mother, and Connor is Ben's father.
Right, and so in the sort of prologue of it, they reveal that it's obvious that Brona is pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they knew it was a little girl, didn't they? Or
I think it was heavily hinted that it was supposed to be a girl.
So that was that was at least my expectation going mm-hmm. in. So shortly thereafter, Brona leaves, and the movie fast forwards 6 years to when the child is 6 years old. And Ben is like 10?
So Ben is 10 years old. Saoirse is about to turn 6. Right. Saoirse is the name of Ben's younger sister. Basically, for her to be brought into the world, Brona had to pass away. Yeah.
Right.
So,
The 6th birthday happens, and then Saoirse finds her mother...
Oh, we forgot to mention
Selkie Coach.
Yeah, sorry.
So,
I think we got to miss this part. In the very beginning of the story, it's established that Ben believes in Celtic mythology, and Brona, his mother, is telling him the story of Selkies, which, for the for those that don't know, is basically the Irish equivalent of a mermaid. It's a Scottish and English, too.
It's generically sort of Celtic. But
the idea is that people who can transform into seals... once they don don a coat or a seal skin.
Exactly. So on her 6th birthday, Saoirse finds her Selkie coat.
Yeah, she finds her mother's coat that was locked up in a trunk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, I think it was put in Brona's old room or maybe like a study that she had.
Okay.
Saoirse happens upon it and then she puts on the coat and goes outside.
Right.
Yeah.
And then as a result, her father and grandmother... who was there to celebrate her birthday,
mm-hmm.
Both kind of freak out, and her father not only throws away her coat, but also essentially banishes them.
Well,
like,
he doesn't banish them. Well, yeah, I
but
think,
he sends
like,
them away.
I mean, like, it's, I think it's implied that, like, once he now realizes that Saoirse knows what the code is and, like, how it has, it how it transformed her into a seal, he's worried that she'll try to do it again, and he does not want her to leave or to, be, like, get lost in another way, so.
Right.
Against the, even though it really wrecks him, like, you can tell that he's very distraught, the fact that he has to send the kids away, they go to live with their grandmother in, Dublin.
Dublin. Yeah, so, and then from there, a bunch of fairies recognize, Saoirse, I think, through,
I think she was playing the shell.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say, like, through her shell playing.
Yeah, there was a shell that was, passed on from Brona to Ben, and he's very territorial of it.
So when he's not, when he's not paying attention, she'll sneak in and play it.
Basically.
Because otherwise, she'll get yelled at.
Yeah. Even though, Saoirse is mute, which should be noted, in that she's turned six and she has yet to speak a single word.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, which is a pretty big point of contention.
Yeah.
And, which the granny stresses by giving her foods like cupcakes or tea that happen to feature, they have nettle leaves in them, which you're supposed to be good for the throat.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. She's a bit,
I mean, we'll talk about sort of what's going on with Granny a little bit later. So, Saoirse plays the shell flute, or whatever you want to call it. Ocarina, maybe?
Like conch, I guess. Conch. It's not really a conch, though. It's a helix shell.
Yeah, it's a helix shell, so.
And yes, that is a direct Pokemon reference.
Sorry. but so the fairy, these three fairies find Saoirse and they kind of more or less spirit her away and drag her and bring her to like this sort of little fairy grove almost.
Mm-hmm. They've got something of a small kind of sanctuary, I guess.
Yeah,
that,
like
that
within...
have other that's within a roundabout in Dublin.
Right.
So they bring Saoirse to this small little sanctuary that they have. And try to see if they can get her to sing so that it will free the rest of the fairies, which up to this point have all been petrified.
Right.
So they basically look like headstones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like kind of,
very decorative ones, but still
dead
fairies.
Well, yeah, they kind of look like the sort of shrine stones that you see sometimes in like Miyazaki movies.
Exactly.
Which, again, we'll
which
talk, we'll
we will get
to
in
into.
A bit.
But so, through this, it's revealed that the antagonist is a guy. Essentially a goddess.
She's a
or
witch.
Like a
she's a witch.
Yeah.
Her name's Maka the Owl Witch.
Right. And she sends these owls that will steal emotions, and then that turns the fairies to stone.
Mm-hmm.
So, from there, it just kind of jumps straight into, or it gets more heavily into sort of the fairy and the sort of fantasy aspects of it.
And the adventure of them trying to get back to.
Right, yeah. So they're trying to get back to the lighthouse where they lived with their father.
Yeah, they were on a small island.
Right.
Which they have to figure out a way to get back to.
Right, which I think it...
which is quite far. I assume it's probably on the... It must be on the west coast of wherever they were, because...
Yeah, based on that,
well, because
what
Dublin
we see
is
of the
on
map.
The, yeah, it, because Dublin's on the east of the Ireland itself. So.
So, you know, they're trying to get back home, and eventually they end up separating Saoirse and Ben. And, so Saoirse gets taken by the Owl Witch, and so Ben goes on a journey to, I mean, he was already on a journey to go back, right? But he then goes to find the Owl Witch to get Saoirse back and free the fairies.
Along the way, he's reunited with his, dog, Koo, who is a large English sheepdog. He's
sheepdog.
This big fluffy dog, very adorable.
Yeah.
But, they managed to happen across each other.
Mm-hmm.
In like this kind of small grove,
yeah,
like meadow
forest glen
sort of
or
thing.
Something.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So then, so along the way, going to find the Owl Witch, he meets the Great Shanaki, which is this really sort of goofy old man who
kind
of
like Rapunzel, but an old man
like, with a beard and everything.
Yeah,
so
like,
it's all
beard and hair. Like,
yeah.
Just,
so there's. His hair
like
is...
like cousin it that never stopped growing,
yeah.
But is decipherable in that the Great Shanaki is a keeper of lore and stories and memories
specifically about the fairy people.
Yes.
So he meets the Great Shanaki and learns.
Well, he learns that Saoirse is sick, or
right,
the fact
exactly.
that since
so...
So at the very beginning of the movie, Saoirse had turned into a seal after she had found the coat. But now that she had become accustomed to being a seal, albeit very briefly, she becomes weaker because she needs to go back to the sea.
Right.
After she's finally transformed.
Right, so, exactly. So the Great Shanaki kind of reveals this to Ben and...
helps him navigate his way over to her.
Yeah, exactly. So he...
uses one of his hairs as like a guide.
Yeah,
as like a guideline like or like, yeah, yeah.
A lifeline or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. So then he goes and he actually meets the Owl Witch and confronts her and finds that she, aside from stealing everyone else's emotions, she also literally bottles her emotions.
Yes, like she kind of hoards them because rather than deal with loss, grief, anger, happiness,
yeah.
whatever, she'd prefer to just stay neutral at all times.
Yeah.
Which is a very interesting thing to incorporate in a children's movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the fact that she's got so many different jars everywhere around her, like basically surrounding her, and she gets around by having the owls lift her
yeah,
up.
Yeah, she can't walk.
Half of her body is petrified.
Right, exactly.
So because of her continually taking away her emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So
then Ben and Saoirse are reunited, and... like, they're reunited in essentially, like, the attic of the Owl Witch's house,
mm-hmm.
and, by playing the helix shell, Saoirse manages to break every bottle in her house,
mm-hmm.
which, turns...
which floods her with emotions,
yeah, which
basically.
Completely overwhelms her.
Yeah, she just basically grows to, like, this giant thing of, like, initially she's like, stop that right now, but a lot of it just has to do with her getting flooded, and
yeah.
eventually she's brought to her old self, which is that of a... fairly kindly old woman, but
yeah.
a very sad one.
Yeah, yeah, for obvious reasons.
Yeah, as, well, that and as she is the mother of McLear,
right,
who
exactly.
is, they, Ben and Saoirse, their lighthouse home is directly next to an island called McLear Island, which, legend goes, it is the petrified remains of McLear, where,
yeah.
McLear was a god who suffered a immense sadness.
Right,
which
and
ended
literally,
up,
he cried so much so that he created an ocean.
Yes.
And then, this is where the Owl Witch sort of began, and that
yeah.
she...
And that Maka is McLear's mother, and
right.
she did not want to see him that upset, and chose to take away his emotions, which
right.
ended up turning him into the island.
Right, exactly. So now they've sort of reformed Maka back to being, you know, a kind old mother. But they still have to go get the coat.
Mm-hmm. Which Connor, their father, had disposed
right,
of.
Right, exactly.
Out
chucked
of fear.
Into the ocean.
Yeah, Connor, out of fear, had decided to get rid of the coat as he did not want to lose Saoirse in the
right.
process.
Exactly. So, Maka essentially, like, puts some kind of special spell or something on
yeah,
on Ku so they can just run straight to the lighthouse
mm-hmm.
From wherever they are.
Him, like, some kind of, like, special bounding powers or something.
Right,
and
yeah,
like,
what's sort
he,
of...
He can, basically, like, more powerful than a locomotive.
Yeah.
And, like,
right,
leap
like
over
fast,
mountains.
Fast than a
yeah.
speeding bullet.
Yep.
So, they go back to the island, and Connor sort of sees them, and he's still like, no, she can't have her coat, because then we'll lose her.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Ben ends up, just jumping straight into the water, which,
Well, he's guided by the seals to
right.
figure out where the chest that
the
had
coat.
Saoirse's
right.
coat was in.
Which is sort of a big thing for Ben, because as we see, like, very early on in the movie, he's terrified of the water.
Yeah, well, he's terrified because he associates it with his mother, like,
leaving
well,
the,
well
like,
what he thinks is drowning, but
yeah.
she just eventually ends up turning into a seal.
Yeah, she just has to leave them to
yeah.
be a seal. So.
Which is really sad.
Yeah.
But it's totally understandable, as he's seen wearing a life preserver the
entire
time.
Entire movie.
Yeah.
I love it.
And he's petrified of water. I don't think he can swim. Like,
no,
yeah.
he cannot.
Yeah.
It's, like, right away stated.
Yeah.
So, he finds the coat and gives it to Saoirse. And then I think they just kind of end up, like, the boat just kind of brings them to, like, McLear Island, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah. It's, what appears to be some kind of, like, I don't know, it's not a rookery, because I know that's for penguins, but, like, a seal colony, basically.
Yeah,
where
kind of
where the
seals
would... have been congregating on the base of McLear Island.
Right. And so she then sings her song, which restores all the fairies. You know, we have a scene of all the fairies being brought back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And
Brona emerges from the sea.
Right.
Yes, with her own coat.
Right, right.
Yeah.
and tells them, like, hey, all the fairies now are essentially leaving, like, severing the connection between the mortal and the fairy worlds. And so, Saoirse being part of both worlds has to decide whether to go with Brona, her mother, or to stay with Connor and Ben. And of course, chooses Connor and Ben.
Well, I mean, it was a very emotional
match. Yeah, no, absolutely.
But it was very understandable in that, like, Saoirse had, like, she was equally...
Yeah, she's pulled in that direction.
Or basically, if she became a Selkie, she could never turn back into a human. Right. So, hence, like, yeah, it's a bit of a double bind, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she ends she chooses to stay with Connor and Ben. Mm-hmm. In the movie, that's pretty much the movie.
Yeah, and then they end up celebrating Ben's 11th birthday.
Yeah, right.
and it kind of mirrors Saoirse's
6th birthday.
Yeah, there's a very nice montage that kind of shows how their lives have gotten a little bit better. Yeah. Everyone's kind of grown for the better.
Right.
So
that's the basic plot of it, which, we wanted to give you before we jump into the other things we want to talk about.
Assuming you've already watched this, I'm sure you probably know, but just as something of a recap.
Yeah, in case you haven't.
Yeah.
Or you're a little rusty on it.
I mean, you should certainly see it beforehand.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we've just ruined it for you.
Yeah, ruined the movie.
But we
can't recreate its charm, though.
I mean, we could try to do an audio play, but I don't know. I feel like it would take too long.
No.
And it's... I don't have the musical instruments on hand, so.
Yeah.
Maybe next
rusty
time.
Rusty on my helix shell playing.
I don't know. Well, we could find, like, a hat or something. That's an idea. Alright, but now we'll get into a little bit more of the overarching folklore and mythology that surrounds the story itself.
Right. So, obviously, like we were saying, there's a lot of presence of, like, fairies and sort of fantastic elements, all of which draw on sort of old Irish Irish and Celtic traditions.
Mm-hmm.
So both the characters Maka and MacLear are sort of taken directly from Celtic lore, mm-hmm. Maka being a goddess of, like, victory and motherhood and I think a few other things.
Yeah, it looks like war, horses, sovereignty.
Horses make sense.
Yeah, right?
So that's Maka. Obviously, she's not an owl witch. She's just associated with these things. Well, if you're familiar with Maka, you've probably heard the tale of Emoine Maka, which is a tale in which she outruns two horses, or outruns the best horses in Ulster, and gives birth to twins while doing so.
Mm.
And Emoine Maka, the place is then named Emoine Maka, and she curses the men of Ulster as a result. So there are some, there are some bits of her that are kind of resonant in Song of the Sea.
But the her being tied to MacLear was sort of
a creative
freedom that they took with it.
Right? Yeah. Well, I mean, like that's kind of a lot of folklore.
Yeah,
right?
Well, accurate. Yeah.
And MacLear is like Manon. Not pronouncing that correctly.
No, Manon MacLear.
MacLear or something like. It's pronounced roughly like that. Yeah. Literally means son of the sea. And he's not even, I don't know that he's necessarily considered a god, but he's certainly similar to one.
It looks like he's considered a deity.
Right.
So something of a god, I guess.
Yeah, something like a god, I mean.
Probably not like Maka tier of god, but
yeah,
like,
well, it's sort of.
Like sub-god, like Hephaestus kind of god.
Well, it's kind of difficult and complex with Irish, folklore in particular, because when the Catholics, when Catholicism came to the island and sort of took over, instead of just flat out trying to erase it, they more adapted these characters. Interestingly enough,
yeah.
So they adapted them so that most of these characters were recognized as, like, old kings.
But there's no real, like, hierarchy with it.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. The only thing is, like, the Tuatha De Dan pantheon does sort of have, like, a king and whatnot, but. That's a whole nother thing we'll not get into.
Yes.
Not being scholars of Irish literature.
We've never gone on the record saying that, and we won't do it now.
No, I took one class, and that's it.
It's fun, though. Only, yeah, I'm gonna take one now. That'll be fun. Yeah.
Could be. But yeah, so that's MacLear, obviously. He's not, like, the sea giant who turned to stone, though he is associated with the Isle of Man. So I feel like MacLear Island is probably supposed to be vaguely referencing that. But I could be wrong there, because I know nothing about the Isle of Man.
Other than that, it has men on it.
Yeah, other than that, it has men.
Yeah.
Presumably.
Presumably only men.
Yeah, it's, turns out it's deserted. There's no one there.
I want to go there anyway.
And then obviously, we talked about the Selkies a little bit.
Yeah, I'll go a little bit more. Yeah, I'll go a little bit more into the Selkies. All right. So, what's interesting about Selkies is that they can be both men or women. Don't discriminate. As long as a Selkie has a coat, they can turn into a seal.
Right.
Yes. What is weird about Selkie men, though, is that they would typically become something of beach Lotharios, like bros that you would see on the beach, in that if they would take off their coats and they would attempt to seduce or otherwise... otherwise become affiliated with unsatisfied women and try to wed them, I guess. Right. Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of? Did you ever see this? It was like some picture someone drew of a short little comic, and it was like these women on a boat, and you just hear like, "Hey girl, what are you wearing? What would you be doing if I was on that boat right now?" And like, what the hell is that? And they look over, like, they look across, like, through a looking glass or whatever, and it's a bunch of, like, mermaids, but they're mermen, and they're just, like, total bros with, like, the backwards caps
and
popped collars.
Wait, did they actually have college shirts?
No, I don't think so. But it was, like, they all have, like, sunglasses on.
Natty lights but everywhere. Yeah, right. Oh, man. We went to college in the Midwest.
Yeah, we did.
We're very accustomed to this.
So, but that's what those beats. Yeah, like a beats. Just this mermaid lounging, like, "Hey girl, yeah,
hey girl, what's up? How you doing?" Yeah, they Selkie guys didn't really have much of a moral compass.
No,
really.
Well.
They're kind of like more like living ids, I guess. But it didn't make them any less attractive.
Yeah,
they just didn't have the best approach to it.
Yeah. Well,
But that's not to say that, so Selkie women are a bit different, though, in that they're as equally beautiful, or probably more attractive than handsome.
Yeah.
I don't like using the word handsome with a woman, it just seems insulting.
It describes a particular type of woman.
Accurate.
Not to say that there's anything wrong with handsome
Albright,
woman.
I'm looking at you.
But there's a distinct difference between a handsome woman and a beautiful woman.
Accurate.
Just as there's a difference between a handsome man and a beautiful man.
Yeah.
Looking at you, Lee Pace.
Oh, he's so beautiful.
I know.
He's such an attractive man. And that was before he was in Guardians. I'm talking about the fall. I'm talking about pushing daisies, Lee Pace. My favorite Lee Pace. Anyway, I'm sorry. Okay. All right, so basically what would happen with a female Selkie is that they would, if they went on to dry land, they would usually end up being courted by a man, typically a sailor or other kind of sea worker. And the men would attempt to trick or take away the Selkie girl's seal skin in that they wouldn't be able to transform again.
Right.
Which is pretty bum. It's pretty sad. And when that happens, they would have no other option but to end up marrying their captor. Because if they can't find the code or if it's been destroyed, they'll stay a human permanently. It's just really kind of messed up.
We're just gonna force Stockholm syndrome on you. Like,
you know what? I think you're attractive. I'm gonna take away your livelihood.
Yeah, what I'm getting out of these Selkie stories is women get screwed.
I mean,
fairy tales, right? But
I don't know. That in itself is a tale as old as time.
Yeah.
Oh man. Ooh. So it's not all lost though. If they happen to get their coat back or find it, it's usually done by one of the Selkie wife's children. I don't know if it's typically girls. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
but with Song of the Sea, it was coincidental.
Yeah, well, I think with Song of the Sea, maybe this is just me impressing my thoughts on it, but
Saoirse was destined to find it, or
To me, it felt like the movie. I think I may be looking at a different thing here. I'm saying that I think in the movie the thought is that it's only women who can be Selkies, but
yeah,
certainly
mural that Brona made, it seems like it's more common for them to be known as Selkies, but it also kind of more ties into the mermaid myth.
right
so I don't know if that's just a Western
definitely
thing, but
yeah definitely I would agree that I don't think it was coincidental that she found the code. I think that was sort of a.
This is the thing that
this is
written in the stars. But the Selkie wife's one of her children found her coat, they would generally be allowed to go with them, like, or to go back with her to the sea.
Okay.
Or they I think they would be given the choice similar to how Saoirse was.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like either they can return to the sea, but they have to stay seals permanently until they, you know, come of age and then lose their own coats. But it's not a terrible deal, really.
Yeah.
As long as you happen to end up married to a person that's not horrible.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's not...
Which is really just that's every person's dream, right?
Just really want to meet someone who's not a total jackass.
Gonna need you to not entrap me into this marriage.
I really don't want to have to try and develop Stockholm Syndrome, okay?
If you don't mind, I'd like to hold off on that.
Yeah.
We'll be getting to Stockholm Syndrome a bit later, too. Not that much,
I guess,
but a little bit.
And then there's, we mentioned the great Shaniqui earlier, and we don't have a lot about him, but,
Shaniqui... was weird trying to find,
he was kind of a weird one.
We don't have a whole lot of history on him, but...
Yeah,
a bit.
Right, like... so the Shaniqui is sort of like an old Celtic lore keeper.
Mm-hmm.
Like a
soothsayer, kind of.
That. I mean,
more like a shaman or something.
Yeah, well, they kept the oral tradition of the, I guess, presumably the tribe, because what we looked at did state something about, like, sounded more like kind of tribal. So, yeah, they would keep all the lore of sort of their tribe, and they would have to then pass it on orally to, you know, whoever would succeed them, sort of.
What I thought was an interesting device in the movie, too, is that the great Shaniqui, the reason that he has so much hair is because every single strand has a story or a memory or some other kind of legend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you just see curtains.
Yeah.
Hair, like, on,
like
hanging off of, like, stalactites.
Yeah, and he, like...
stalactites is on the...
disappears and then, like, ends up, like, hanging upside down from his own
Which
hair.
Looks really fun, admittedly.
Yeah.
I would probably
vomit, but I'd enjoy it.
It would be worth it. It would be, like, it's the closest we'd ever get to being human yo-yos.
Yeah.
It's the most, it's the household name in animation.
Yeah, literally.
I mean, there are other ones, but it's like Disney is like the. They're not just the most, I wouldn't say they're the most established, but they're the most infamous, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, for better or worse, they're the name everyone knows.
And this is not to say that we both love Disney, but it's just like how huge this company is.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly have.
It's pretty inescapable.
Yeah, I certainly have my qualms with Disney and. Especially some of their recent flicks, but we're not going to talk about that.
Because this is about Song of the Sea.
Yes.
We will, however, end up talking about one of them, one of their better-known features.
Right.
Which leads into how I was talking about Selkies before and showing the parallels that it drew between mermaids. I'm going to talk about The Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
And to notice a couple of things I happen to see overlapping in the story.
Right.
Some of them are pretty small in that they both feature sheepdogs, which... The Koo is the sheepdog in Song of the Sea.
Right.
Prince Eric has a sheepdog named Max in The Little Mermaid. One of my favorite things that I noticed, though, was the importance of voice or singing that happened in both movies, which I thought was cool, because in the beginning of The Little Mermaid, as I hope you guys know, I don't think it's possible to not see The Little Mermaid. Like, if you're,
you know,
especially if you're our age.
Yeah. Like, I never owned it, but I definitely somehow have seen The Little Mermaid at least twice.
I would think. I'm pretty sure I showed it to you at least once.
That's entirely possible.
You're not wrong.
You're not wrong.
But no, so the importance of voice in that, in the beginning of The Little Mermaid, it's established that Ariel has... quote Sebastian, the most beautiful voice, and that she's very well known for her singing.
Right.
That she's not seen at the opening concert of the film, which becomes a big plot point that establishes her father's relationship with her.
Right.
And
right.
that she's not always around when she needs to be. She's very kind of flighty and curious and is fixating on human things as opposed to
right.
enjoying, or as opposed to living her life as a mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
To contrast that, there's Saoirse, who at the very beginning of the movie is established as... She's a pretty shy character, I would say.
Yeah, it's, she definitely...
Ben was kind of a jerk to her at the beginning, though.
Yeah, like, Ben, like...
He resents her a bit.
Because, yeah, well, I think Ben is more of, like, a sort of a brash...
he's like a stereotypical almost, older brother.
Yeah, yeah, it's,
I mean,
oh, absolutely.
I mean, like, if you've got and a sibling, sort of, you know how, like... If you've got an older sibling, they tend to be, like, they can be a little bit bossier.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, like, they just Ben, like to be like, I'm in charge, we're gonna do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ben kind of holds
definitely,
that.
That's definitely Ben. He's
yeah,
sort
plus
of very
he's 10, so he's
yeah, he's
like...
also 10, so he's I don't know, man. I don't know if you've spent time with 10-year-olds. They can be jerks.
They can be a little bit bossy and everything.
Yeah.
And you feel bad for Saoirse, but it's like, you still get that they do care about each other.
Yeah, there
Ben
is
just
definitely...
has a weird way of showing it.
Yeah, he
so,
definitely
like,
has
he, and eventually he softens substantially, and once he
right,
realizes
yeah.
it, he's also a bit uninformed in that he doesn't really know why Brona went away. It's later
right.
established after meeting the Great Shanaki as to what caused her disappearance,
right,
how she
right.
sacrificed herself so that Saoirse could be brought into the world, and that changes everything for Ben. And he makes it his mission to find her, as opposed to an obligation.
Right. Yeah. So, and we'll get into a little bit more with that.
Yeah.
A little bit later. But so yeah, Little
yeah.
Mermaid. We've got you know.
Yeah.
We've
so,
got these two
yeah, the
female characters
who yeah.
are yeah, and the importance of voice.
Yeah, and that Saoirse had not been able to talk, or she was about to turn 6, still hadn't said a word.
Right. And Ariel's, and they both spend the whole most of the movie mute.
Yeah, but oddly enough, it's Ariel that gives up her
yeah.
voice in order to get what she wants, and Saoirse has to use her voice or has to be able to learn how to sing or talk. Really, I mean, just
right,
basically
yeah.
just speak at all, in order to save their family and the livelihood of all these fairies.
Right.
So a lot of pressure.
Yeah, a lot of pressure for
a
6-year-old. Oh.
But, yeah, there's, there were a couple of other things I remember thinking about.
Oh, well, on the note of the importance of the voice.
Yeah.
There's also, like, the representation of the shell.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Yep. Which is very, another very weird thing in that Saoirse uses the shell, this helix shell. I don't even know what the proper name for it. I'm just going to call it helix
shell. Yeah,
I'm going
to keep calling it the helix
shell. Just because that's what I know.
Yeah.
So, okay, anyway. The helix shell that Brona gives Ben shortly before she disappears has this importance because it plays the Song of the Sea, which is the namesake of the film.
Right.
Which is this very, very simple, very pretty melody that it ends up being the catalyst for a lot of the action to start. In that,
yeah,
once,
absolutely.
Once Saoirse plays the Song of the Sea in her bathroom.
At the granny's house.
Yeah, no, it was
oh, wait,
it,
yeah,
it,
no,
it,
there
it
was,
the
yeah,
house,
right,
yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, so Saoirse plays the melody for the Song of the Sea, and these, I don't know if they're, like, pixies, or, like, it's some
yeah,
kind of magical
there's
light
some sort of,
stuff.
Like, little, essentially, like, magical fireflies.
Or like, will-o'-the-wisps
yeah,
that they had in,
almost, maybe that's the
Bloodhead and Brave.
Going for there.
I don't know, it could be, but,
I mean, because they never mentioned
there's
it,
some
so.
Overlapping there, I'm sure. But,
yeah, wouldn't shock me.
But, yeah, so, it ends up being the catalyst and the saving grace for quite a few sections of the movie, in that only
right.
through using only through playing the Song of the Sea does Saoirse is she able to find her coat to turn it into a Selkie, and later she has to play the song to open
to
up
break
the yeah
bottles.
To break open
yeah.
the jars that have the emotions to defeat or to tame Maka, I guess
yeah,
for lack
I don't
of a better
know
term.
How I wanna...
I don't know. They don't really tame. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, basically to bring her back to normal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wherein Saoirse has to sing, or she has to play that song in order to help establish their world being safe again.
Right.
As opposed to in The Little Mermaid, wherein the shell that's being used is the one hoarded by Ursula that contains Ariel's voice,
right.
which causes her to be mute so that she can't talk, and later Ursula uses it to her own advantage to brainwash Eric
yeah,
into thinking that it's that she transformed as Vanessa, this character that
right,
he almost
right,
marries
right.
on the barge, as Ariel, which once they later break it during the wedding scene, Ariel gets her voice back, and Eric wakes up and realizes that Ariel is the one that he's been looking for the whole time.
Right, right. Because he heard her singing, like, early in the movie or something, didn't he?
When she drug him out of the, there was, like, that big storm. There was that big, like, hurricane, whatever
it
was.
Right.
She saves him from drowning, and then when they're on the beach, she sings to him, and it wakes him up. That's... He doesn't quite get a good look at her, but
so obviously he can't
Yeah, but the voice stays with him, so. But, yeah, it's...
You
would hope
else.
That there'd be a little bit more to their relationship than just her singing.
I mean, like, but, well, I think I that, know. I mean, oh, okay, let's jump into that then. So we were talking about the folklore present in Song of the Sea and how they've taken, and ultimately what they did is they just took these characters and they said, we want to reference these things, but we're not going to use them in sort of a more traditional way.
It's loose. In that,
right,
like,
it's sort of a loose
together.
Interpretation and they're, you know, they're... They're taking elements of these characters and using them in the movie sort of as they see fit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in a way that works very well, and it's sort of like a pastiche almost.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to Disney movies, which just take that fairy tale and then they kind of, that's it. Like,
it's like,
I mean, like, yeah,
this
obviously,
is our story, that's about it.
Right, this is our story and we're sticking to it.
that's not to say that there aren't variations on it, like say with The Lion King, which is basically just Hamlet with lions.
But I like Hamlet.
I don't hate The Lion King, I literally
like the character Hamlet.
I don't want to sound weird, but I don't really like Shakespeare that much. I know, I'm going to sound like such a rube or a square, but I don't really like Shakespeare that much. I don't know, even though I'm sure a lot of my favorite movies are based on it, like the classic hit 10 Things I Hate About You, which is about Taming of the Shrew.
Or wait, was it?
And it's Taming of the Shrew. Much Ado About Nothing was She's All That.
Yep.
And, oh my god, the late 90s.
And She's the Man was,
Twelfth
Night! God, I have to remember this. It's my favorite one.
You said that with such vigor.
I love Twelfth Night. I love it so much, but...
Even though the movie, don't care for it.
She's the Man, though, I like it.
It's okay. I just don't really like Amanda Bynes.
We're getting off topic.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, we'll back up a little bit here.
Hello.
Okay. Oh, no, we've been joined by a cat. Please don't be chatty.
There's a cat in the room.
We're very easily distracted. Quiet.
It's
okay,
the,
fine,
it's
get
the
over
power
here.
Of cats and cuteness. So Disney's stories sort of, take hold of their fairy tale, and they may, like, sort of, again...
They take
like,
some liberties, but mostly
they take
it's,
some
it's
liberties,
a very,
and they may
it's
take,
generally
like,
a very direct story.
Yeah, it's a pretty direct translation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll take, like, okay, well, in this version of the story, this happens, so we're going to use that. And in this version of the story, this happens. Like if you imagine A, B, and C, and there's variations like A1, A2, A3, right? So they're like, okay, story A1 has this beginning, which we like, but it has... Ending C1, which we hate, so we're going to use ending C3 type of thing.
Like, it started off like that, but eventually their movies ended up getting changed a bit more. Like, say, Rapunzel, I would say, is the most...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The most loose basis for that story.
Yeah.
Because in the original Rapunzel, she ends up getting kicked out of the house because her, the witch realizes that she's pregnant.
Right, and the prince's eyes get stabbed out.
Yeah, she's forced to take her child into, like,
she's
the wilderness.
She's in a desert or something.
It's very weird.
It's grim.
It's more of like a story that was written by Hunter S. Thompson than Hans Christian Andersen.
I'm sorry.
No, Grimm. Grimm's fairy tales.
Grimm's fairy tales are well,
no, yeah,
Grimm.
No, yeah.
The guy was not.
Oh God! I really hope the microphone can't get that.
I
have to get rid of her.
I'm sorry.
I'll be right back.
Sorry
here,
about the purring.
Let's lead into talking about the next film, which is...
Well, so I didn't... So I watched some of the commentary with Tracy.
Hold on, I have to take her downstairs. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Oh. So I didn't watch as much of the commentary as Tracy did, but I definitely can see it. Is apparently they took a lot of inspiration from Miyazaki films, and specifically My Neighbor Totoro, which you can kind of see in that in a number of ways, in that we have this this sort of, you know, the fantastic elements and the real world elements sort of coexisting in a you know, sort of in an intertwined way, and so these things exist alongside each other, but also simultaneously these spaces are somewhat because these are fantastic sort of fairy spaces, you can't really reach them. Like, when May, I believe when May goes back to try and find Totoro with her sister, she can't find him.
Hmm.
Right? So they only appear at certain times or in certain instances.
Yeah. Well, there's also...
I'm talking about, like, My Neighbor Totoro.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, there's another thing I noticed that I actually just realized. The fact that both the children and their father live on this, like, kind of idyllic
isolated...
Well, no, it's also that and the fact that since the mother is absent, we're in Totoro, she's sick. In Song of the Sea, she's presumed dead.
Right, yeah.
So, but they've got a similar sort of dynamic in that they have to basically... Or Saoirse and Ben have to try to be each other's best friend, even though it doesn't always work.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, Ben, there's sort of an isolated sense to these to both of these narratives, and, like...
Yeah.
You know, even though there are clearly other characters, like, there's some little boy who's kind of weird.
Oh, yeah, in My Neighbor Totoro. What was his name? Kanta, I think?
Kanta sounds about right.
He's just, like, he's kind of a jerk. I don't know. I think it's more like, I think he likes Satsuki, but he's at that point where boys are like, girls are gross enough, cooties.
Yeah, it's like that 10-year-old, you know, it's that stupid 10-year-old, like,
stupid 10-year-old.
Shove you in the dirt, like, I like you.
Yeah, gonna pull your pigtails. Yeah. See you later, nerd. I hope she likes me.
Whole lot of garbage that is.
Yeah. Stylistically.
So one thing you'll notice when you watch Song of the Sea, everything's very, like, round and, like, kind of fluid.
Yeah, and clearly favors the country as opposed to the city. Because once you get into the city, it is quite gritty.
Yeah, no, it's very...
it's established that, when they end up going to live with Granny in Dublin, it's very contained, kind of claustrophobic. Yes, like, being in her house is so claustrophobic.
No, yeah, like, it seems very, like, just kind of packed to the gills.
Yeah.
But yeah, both these stories are very sort of pastoral.
No! Sorry, guys. You might be hearing some meowing.
Sorry,
hopefully she's not too loud.
She's very needy. She's a princess.
And the issue is that if I pet her, she will purr very loudly. And it will be somehow more distracting than the meowing.
Yeah.
Because you'll just be hearing it in the background, like white noise.
I don't know. Maybe it'll help you sleep at night.
Maybe. I don't know.
Why are you sleeping to our podcast? How dare you? I'm kidding. Please listen.
No, for the love of God, please listen. There were a couple of other things I wanted to get in about My Neighbor Totoro. Well, this is actually something I was listening to on the commentary, but it was one of the films that Tom Moore directly cited as inspiration for when... just for both the atmosphere and the look that I think he was going for. And that everything green, it's very pretty, it's very inviting. Even compared to... you know that one scene where Ku and Ben are reunited when they're in the forest with, like, that big mud pile thing?
Yes.
He was talking about how back in the mid-80s in Ireland, that was very common and that people did not really give a crap about the environment. And they would just, like, casually throw, like, washing machines, old TVs.
Right, yeah,
like,
it was weird.
Which is not totally off now, but the fact that they would just be, like, to put a stove in the middle of a forest, you would think would be a big... I don't know, but somebody would care, but... Freya! Oh my god, I'm so sorry, hold on. Come on. Can you talk about the importance of movement?
So, one thing Tracy was telling me about, which I do get thinking back on it, is near the end of both movies, My Neighbor Totoro and Song of the Sea, you have a scene where great distance is crossed on a large animal. So in My Neighbor Totoro, obviously, we have the cat bus. So they're like, you're like running across the countryside, literally, in this giant cat. And then in Song of the Sea, you have both the kids are riding on the back of Ku as he's running back to... to the the island. She's very demanding.
Yeah, she does this whenever I come over, which is really obnoxious.
She really likes Tracy.
I apparently give the best cuddles.
Yeah.
That's what I've come to learn. Anyway, I'm sorry. Where do you
I was talking about like how they're riding on the back of Ku, which directly mirrors the cat bus.
The cat bus at the end where they're trying to find May.
So yeah, that's kind of a thing that's going on there. And also that well, that's absolutely, like, obviously, so that's the direct reference they're going for. It also kind of... It reminds me of Ponger Bon.
Yeah, I totally get that, where Ponger is turned into, which is, this is talking about The Secret of Kells, which was Cartoon Saloon's first feature.
Right.
Which came out, what was it? Was it 4 years before this? I think so.
Yeah, four or five. I don't quite remember.
Yeah, I think it was 2010. Because they started working on Song of the Sea immediately afterwards. They're like a freaking powerhouse.
Love it.
Which is awesome.
That's probably what they're going for. But in the Pongerbon tale, Pongerbon rides rides on the back of like dozens of things, but
just dozens.
Just riding everything. No, but he's like gripping onto like some like magical horses that run across the world in like an hour or something.
Oh my.
Some kind of weird magical thing like this. And that's kind of what it reminded me of, because when you see Ku running, you do see like these sort of at least I kind of remember, maybe I'm just inserting them, ephemeral shapes.
Oh no, it's it's McLear's dogs.
Oh, well, there you go. The story, so it's before? Right, yeah. Okay.
Or like, yeah, so McLear had these two hounds. I think they're supposed to be Irish wolfhounds or something. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely more.
They look like gigantic Scotties, basically. which I know that there's a breed for that, but off the top of my head, I don't know.
Just a huge, beautiful dog with a fantastic moustache.
They look like Tchaikovsky, but two of them with four legs.
Yeah, so we're kind of talking about style a little bit.
It's so pretty. Like, I can't emphasize enough, like, hearing us describe it is not going
to
do it justice.
No, yeah, you
just
have to
look at it.
You plain and simple have to watch it,
I saw this in theaters with, it was like a matinee showing on a Sunday. Maybe, like, back in mid-March. And it was, there was a fairly big crowd of people, but, mm-hmm. like, just seeing it on that big of a screen, every single picture looked like it could be, like, a painting or a lithograph or something. I wanted a still of everything in there.
Yeah.
May actually get one.
Nice.
I'm sure I could find one somehow.
Right. And I...
But, it's very round, and it's very, and I've seen a, psychological study that shows that babies, when they're growing, or when they're in their developmental stages, if you offer them certain soft toys, ones that have rounder shapes, like say a Mickey Mouse plush toy, will end up getting picked by them more because number one, it reminds them of them, like of themselves as babies. which sounds really
weird,
right?
But
they're gonna automatically go for the thing that looks more like them.
Yeah,
because
it's familiar.
Yeah, because it's familiar and it's what they're comfortable with. Yeah, and plus round shapes are a lot more enticing than like say a triangle.
Yeah, no, there's definitely like, super harsh. No, I mean that's kind of. Which triangles?
I have nothing against triangles.
No, you're quite a fan.
I enjoy the triangle. But it's, in terms of design, I think that's why, and also it flows, obviously it flows.
Yeah, smooth and, like, fluid about, like, all movement.
Because they incorporate that with, like, say, the waves that are cresting on the beach.
Right.
Like, once the foam actually starts hitting the sand, all the, what would normally just be foam or bubbles that you would see on a beach, they turn into, like, spirals, shapes, which is really, it's just so pretty.
Visually, it's one of the best movies I've ever seen.
If you're also into symmetry, you'll find some of that too. Not quite like Wes Anderson levels of symmetry, but he does that for framing with the characters. They're all very, there's a lot of soft angles, which makes it very inviting.
Absolutely. There's something to be said for,
You don't get,
like unconscious psychology of, like, the comfort of round shapes.
Well, then it's pleasant to look at. In the sense of, like, there's no harsh things you have to worry about.
Like, it's not like you're dealing with, like, these sort of sharp angles.
It's just more, like, relaxing, I guess. I don't know.
No, yeah, I can definitely.
But
get
I can't emphasize it enough, like the colors that they go into, like some of the backgrounds, phenomenal.
Yeah, I really want. I need to watch it again and just like stare at it.
There's this one scene where Ben, Saoirse, and Ku are. This is part of their traveling back to the island montage, where it involves these pylons, like electrical pylons, power lines.
Oh,
that man. And the geometry of them look like owls, which I thought was really a really smart idea.
No, and it was beautiful too.
Yeah, it was just plus the way that it framed the perspective of the shot and that, like, directing you right into the center of the frame where the characters are. And this is when Saoirse starts to get sick. So
she's really starting to.
Well, because they thought that she just had a cold. Like, she coughs and then one of her strands of hair turns white.
Right.
Which shows
that
she's about to either turn into a Selkie or become sick, or she could die.
Right.
It causes them to hurry even more to be able to get her back home.
Yeah.
So, like, where she really needs her coat, otherwise things could get very turn bad very quickly.
Right. Yeah.
Let's get into some themes and motifs though.
We're
kind of getting to that.
Well, yeah, so the biggest one for me, at least, is sort of dealing with loss and these complex emotions.
Mm-hmm. It deals really well with both grief and the consequences of not letting it out.
Right.
Or not dealing with loss or despair.
Right, like just flat out not dealing with your emotions. Yeah. I mean,
is the character of Granny, basically.
Well, yes. And
Granny and Connor.
Yeah, I was going to say also to some extent.
And to an extent, Ben, because Ben lashes out. Like, his default is anger.
I think that's.
Saoirse,
Saoirse's so.
Well,
like,
she doesn't know.
Aloof.
Like,
she's removed from it, so.
Well, it's not that she's aloof. She's just, she's not aware of. What the situation was.
Yeah, so she's removed from it, so she's not even. She doesn't even really figure into the equation of how we deal with loss.
Yeah.
But
she knows that she's part of the reason for it.
Yeah.
For a lot of the
sadness.
She
at least
understands.
You know, it's directed at her for a reason.
Yeah.
Even if she doesn't know or understand it.
Yeah, but she knows that it's linked to her. And when we later realize exactly what Brona had to go through that to bring her into the world, it makes more sense. And they all become a lot more open with dealing with things. Because at the beginning of the movie, it's established that Ben and his father, Connor, had a very kind of tense relationship. And Connor almost kind of ignores Ben to an extent.
Oh, no, he absolutely does.
Yeah,
like,
but it's, which really sucks, because Ben clearly just misses being with his father, and he misses having that figure, but.
Well, I think it's just overall Ben misses having anyone, because he pushes Saoirse away,
mm-hmm.
He's lost his mother, and his father doesn't pay any attention to him.
Yeah, and
so
he's
all he's
kind
got
of
is,
out of options.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
well,
all he's got
Ku.
Is, all he's got is Ku, who, in fairness, is a fantastic companion.
Ku is fantastic, but he's also a dog, so it's not like he can't really talk to him in that. Like, or, like, Ben does talk to Ku, but he has, like, the sort of things
Ku
of, like.
Can't talk back.
Yeah, Ku has a full range of emotion, but all he knows is basically loyalty and making sure that he protects Ben and Saoirse.
Right.
Which is fine, but it causes Ben to be a lot lonelier than he lets on.
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
Which really sucks.
Yeah.
It's pretty heartbreaking to see, like, where you can kind of understand why he's a jerk. It doesn't make it okay.
No, yeah, absolutely.
But you understand it.
So that's how he deals with it, and, you know, none of these characters deal with it so much as they just react to it.
Yeah.
And all in negative ways, which the movie obviously.
It's not to say that there isn't necessarily
there's
nothing presented as it being a clear right and wrong way to deal with things.
I think a condemnation of the idea of
Just bottling things up, which makes
sense.
Yeah,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But also like the way
that's kind of the crux of the story, which ends up like helping things resolve.
Right. Well, and sure. I think we kind of see a little bit. Like, absolutely, there's a time for grief, right? But, like.
But you can't let it.
With Connor, that's it.
Yeah, where it's like Connor basically shut down
so
as soon as Brona went
away. He's really consumed by.
Yeah, like, there's a scene at very early in the movie. It's when she's discovered her coat. So, Granny is there taking care of the kids, or she's babysitting them, for lack of a better term. They're
spent
all
the
asleep.
Night with them,
Granny's looking after the kids, and Connor has gone to the local village, like on the mainland, to go to go to a pub. Like, he's shown with the beer in front of him, but he's just like sitting there.
He's
just so depressed.
Presumably for God knows how many hours.
I would think at least for
three, four hours.
At least.
So
even though he barely touches his beer, he's just sitting there because he's so distraught. But he is not. he's not crying. He's just shown as, like, just basically sitting there very stoically.
No, he's kind of, yeah.
And he's clearly depressed.
Yeah,
but it's,
he's very, like, sort of stone-faced.
Yeah, but, like, but it reminded me of, like, my own family, wherein, like, I've got certain family members that deal with grief that way. Like, some people are a little bit more outward about it. Others don't really like to talk about it.
Right, yeah.
So, but it's just, it reminds you of, like, how we all kind of go through different cycles. Like, you know, like the five
right,
stages
yeah,
of grief,
exactly.
Where it's, you know, what is it? There's denial, anger, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, and I think they're all kind of stuck at a similar place.
They're all stuck in different spots. Obviously, Connor's just right in that depression. He's not.
Yeah, he's
moving. Connor's in anger.
Yeah, Connor's in anger. Saoirse, she's not really in.
Well, yeah, she's not in.
Well,
the,
no, she's
again,
not in
she's
denial.
Not really in the cycle. She might, if she was anywhere in the cycle, I would say she'd probably be acceptance.
Yeah, probably. And I would you say that Granny is probably bargaining because she's trying to rationalize to herself that
yeah,
getting the kids
kind of
into
in
a
the
different environment. I think deep down she knows it won't make much of a difference.
I would say
she's
somewhere between denial and bargaining.
Well, then the character of Granny, she's presented in a very stubborn way, in that
right.
like she has a very matter of fact. This is my way.
Right.
What I think is right.
Right. Right, which directly parallels Maka.
Well, like they're Maka and Granny are basically doppelgangers.
Yeah,
like, it's the same thing with Connor and McClear.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those characters are very deliberately meant to be the same. I mean,
yeah.
They're voiced by the same people.
Yeah, exactly. but I'm a very big sucker for stuff like that.
Oh
like,
yeah, no, I think
I've got a thing for like dueling characters like that, similar to how the Little Mermaid did it.
Yeah.
So well, there you go. But
there it is. No, but yeah, absolutely. I think like I think almost a narrative symmetry there is.
Mm-hmm. Well, where it's like it's supposed to showcase on like a symbolic sort of thing where like Ben learns through this. It's like, you know what, like. She's right, he understands, like, why people do certain things, or, like, why they let their grief control them.
Right.
But it's wrong to just not, like, to not feel those feelings, and then just,
right.
like, if something happens to you, and you're really upset, or you feel betrayed, or hurt, or something, feel those feelings, don't bottle them up.
Yeah,
that's what they're getting at, because
like,
that's the only way, as long as you go through the grieving process, then you can finally move on.
Right, exactly.
All the other characters are stuck.
Right, yeah, and even, I mean, that's what we see with Maka, where she literally,
yeah.
physically bottles her emotions.
Yeah, and she's also physically stuck.
Yeah,
in that
she's stuck, but she can't move.
No, because she has to rely on the owls to carry her
yeah.
around. And, what do you think, the owls are there supposed to, or they're there to be parallels to the fairies, I assume.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're like the evil versions of it.
I think that extends as far as they're servants of, they're in opposition, and there's three of them.
Yeah, that's true.
But the owls don't speak.
But
I mean, I guess the owls do have a motivation, and that motivation is just to do what Maka wants.
Yeah.
And to bottle emotions.
And it's similar to how Granny has a budgie that remains in a cage very on. That doesn't really do much.
Yeah,
it has one or two scenes.
But.
Yeah, like one or two, but it's just like there in a cage.
Yeah,
this movie sounds a lot heavier than it is. Like it's.
I mean, it,
well, no, but it
I
is.
Think,
it's
yeah,
like, but
no,
it approaches
absolutely. This movie is
like the lessons that it's delivering to kids. It's not that kids can't handle them. It's just that adults have to understand that kids are fully capable of processing this stuff if they just give them.
Yeah,
the,
no, kids are truly sponges. Like
yeah,
they're
a lot smarter than we give them credit for, and that's why I don't
in
like
the yeah, definitely in the sense that like kids,
they're perceptive. Like,
they
I
are.
Mean, like,
they
understand.
They,
like,
they sponge it up and they internalize it, and they don't like if you were to ask them what it means, they probably would have a hard time telling you. But
yeah, but in
the
but,
fact is that they do just kind of take it in.
Yeah,
so
but like
to,
in my understanding during their formative years, it's like kids will kind of take that in and then both
mm-hmm.
internalize it and then make their own judgments based
yeah,
off of
then,
it. Like. They're not, like, it, I don't know, it's, this is weird because neither of us have kids, neither
yeah.
of us are married.
Yeah,
but this is what I've picked up from, like, but we've both got friends that are either involved in education or through, like, talking with our nieces and nephews or,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
and their respective
parents.
One of
our good friends has two kids.
Yeah,
so
and we've kind of picked up how, like, her kids, they're very quick.
Yes,
so,
yes, they are.
Like, if you give kids the tools to be able to look at these lessons and don't talk down to them about it.
That's critical. That's one of the great things about this movie is it doesn't talk down to you.
I love kids movies like that.
I love it. Yeah,
movie you see that so has many some... like made for DVD movies where they're just like, oh, just watch this thing for 60 minutes.
Like, I mean,
which
some...
sucks. Like it cheapens the message of the film where it's like you have this capability to be able to target kids at a very prime time of their lives. And, like, to help form their ideas.
And
of,
you choose of, yeah. to be just, like, ham-fisted and preachy.
Yeah, which is, yeah. That's not to say we haven't seen material like that before, but films like this that are more subtle about it.
Yeah.
And that respect their audience and showcase just how important these lessons are.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really beneficial because there were a lot of kids in the audience when I saw it. And I was like, this is awesome because they're going to be able to take these lessons later. And it'll hopefully make them... better informed people.
Right, yeah.
Because like it's hard to teach empathy sometimes.
It's very hard.
And like with a movie like this, it's all about like understanding how other people feel when they go through a similar
trauma. There's a lot there.
Which I love. It's
yeah.
I just love this movie. I can't really get over it.
No. Well, I mean, on that note, like one of the things we've talked about that I love is it's really a non-violent film.
It's
not necessarily that it preaching nonviolence, but
even the antagonists are presented in not like it's not in like a black and white what's that phrase I forget where it's like
a dichotomy.
No, it's you know like where if people who think that something is just all bad or all good.
Oh yeah, that absolutism.
Yeah, like absolutism, I guess. I think there's a similar term for like on like a psychoanalytic level.
There's
nothing of like that black and white thinking. It's like Mock is presented as the antagonist, but she's not really. I mean, she is, but it's very understandable as to why she's doing stuff. It's not like where it's like, I'm going to do this because I'm evil or because, like, I have power.
There's clear motivations and also there's clear, like...
Like, it's revealed that she ended up taking away McLear's emotions because she was so distraught at seeing him that upset for so long.
Yeah.
She did what she thought that she needed to do to help him out. It wasn't necessarily the healthiest thing, but it seemingly stopped a problem, but it didn't really. It's more like putting a Band-Aid over, like, a gaping wound.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean,
it needs to get treated. You have to deal with that somehow.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, like, she didn't want to see her son suffering, so
how could you fault her for that, and it comes from like a mothering sort of approach it's like she's doing it because she understands what it's like to go through loss like that, and
it's so good.
The story is so tight, and that's the one because I love Secret of Kells, but Song of the Sea, it took care of so many of to me, I think Secret of Kells was very ambitious, and it had a very interesting story arc, but I think they tried to cram a little bit too much in.
Right.
Song of the Sea simplified it, which is great.
Right. Well, I think that goes back... When we watched the commentary the other day, and he was talking about, like, when we initially conceived it, we had what we called the fat baby, which was just...
Was that what the
Yeah, that's what he said. Tom Moore was like, we had what we called the fat baby, and it was our initial script, and it was everything. And over time, we're like, this is not gonna work. So I think Secret of Kells was kind of the fat baby.
Well, I mean, which is... But it's okay, because at the same time, it's like, the Secret of Kells, more than anything else, established the general, like, the feel that they're going for, the atmosphere of how... Their movies are all generally, they're very serene to an extent. Secret of Kells had a lot of violence, but there was a war involved.
Yeah.
So it made sense.
Yeah.
But,
whereas Song of the Sea didn't necessarily have that.
Mm-hmm. There's still plenty of action. There's a scene
where they're in the attic at...
Oh, it's intense.
Yeah, it's super intense. I was like, we were sitting there watching it, and I'm like... Okay.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's like, I know it's gonna be okay, but still, I'm just like, holy, like, I'm terrified.
No, yeah, because it's revealed that Saoirse's already half turned to stone because she hasn't been able to sing, so that automatically amps everything up. Ku's sitting on top of the door where Mock is trying to break in. Owls are like, they're outside the window, they're trying to crack into it and then be able to take her away, and it's like, it's intense.
Yeah, it's a very intense scene.
But it's not bloody or gory or anything.
It's more like...
It still makes you seize up a little bit because you're like, oh, what's going to happen? It just makes you a little bit anxious.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the rest of it, it's just so...
It is, it's a good sort of, like, comfortable...
I mean, like, it's similar to, like, what My Neighbor Totoro is, where, yeah, wherein it's, like, the moments of tension in the movie are emotionally-based tension.
Right,
it's,
yeah.
Or it's, and, sorry, that sounds stupid. Where it's, like, it's not motivated out of violence, it's just more out of, like, the stakes that these characters have to go through.
Right.
Wherein Saoirse's gonna lose her essence of being a Selkie, and she's gonna be turned into stone, and, because then no right. one else can change that.
Yeah, and that's gonna end, yeah, like all fairies.
So yeah, and then Ben will end up losing his sister, and then the fairies will never be able to get transformed again, yeah, and then Mako won't learn anything, Ben will always be bitter and depressed, and, mm-hmm, or, sorry, Connor will always be bitter and depressed. It's a deep movie.
Yeah, no, it really is, and that's why, yeah, that's one of the reasons it's so great.
Yeah, but, so we can't stress this enough, you really need to see it.
Yeah.
We listened to part of it with the commentary, but most of the observations that we had were just either things that we picked up or what we had researched.
Yeah, yeah. So took some time thinking about it.
Yeah, but so, I seriously can't recommend it enough. It's a real shame that it didn't get more exposure.
Yeah.
I think it was released around, or at least stateside, for us around, I think, Oscar season, probably.
Yeah, because like, right,
it was one of the
there,
animated features that was nominated for an Oscar.
And also, I mean, unfortunately, because it's a smaller studio, it also got a smaller release.
Yeah, so which is rough. I mean, yeah, because the theater I had to go to was basically in a suburb of the downtownish area, still fairly downtown. But yeah, we're like, yeah, so it's...
It's not easy, unless
you live in like a major city in the U.S. or elsewhere for that matter.
You probably wouldn't have been able to see it in theaters. Yeah,
but at least you can get it on Amazon, yeah, or iTunes or anything. Seriously,
yeah, it's out now.
Highly recommend you check it out. You won't be disappointed. It's a wonderful family film, and everyone will find something that they'll,
yeah,
like about it.
Absolutely.
Frankly, if you don't like this movie, I doubt that you have a soul.
I don't want to tell you point, man.
Yeah, no. Seriously, it's one of those films where you have to experience it. If you can see on a big screen, even better, because you will appreciate that all the detail and all the nuances that went into making,
yeah,
it. Because everything was really well thought out. It's just great. That's not really much else to say, I guess.
Yeah, I think we've exhausted everything we have to say, so yeah. I think we'll...
we'll
cut it off there.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yep. Have a great one, guys.
Bye-bye.